Welcome back to the Untitled Superiority Complex Boarding Party Board Game Podcast.
Okay, good. I was going to say, you can't say that.
You know what I thought? I just threw it on the tweet, but my wife loved the name. Nameless, but not gameless.
Hey.
That might be
our
new name.
That's classy.
That might be our new name. Nameless, but not gameless.
My hair's standing up.
You like that?
Yeah.
I put it on the, when I tweeted out our last announcement. So it's been a couple of weeks. The recording schedule's weird. This show should have been out 2 weeks ago, and it wasn't. It was out last week. Which means nothing to you, the listener.
Means all everything
you,
to us.
All you care about is what games are we talking about this week. So the last couple of weeks at game night, we actually had we played some older stuff because we've expanded our gaming group to include some new friends.
So we bring out the classics
to bring out the classics. So we don't have a lot in the way of brand new games, although there is one game I want to talk about. One game that really started really one of the most contentious board games night we've ever had, board games nights we've ever had, which was last week. We brought out a little game that should make you mellow. It's a nice little filler game.
We've talked about it before. We've played it before.
Based on no. This game is based on a pop culture icon, Mr. Bob Ross.
Oh, yeah.
And there is a game at Target called Bob Ross: The Art of Chill Game, which is the name of the Netflix show that they just put out all of Bob Ross's work and call it The Art of Chill.
It was a beautiful game.
And it's a really cool, you're basically just trying to paint along with Bob Ross, and you're trying to paint the most paintings in the amount of time given. It's a nice 30-minute, it's a very great game for beginners. If you're just kind of dipping your toes into the modern board game movement, it has a lot of the mechanics that you'll find in some of these games. It's a set collecting game. You're collecting sets of colors and brushes to paint the paint before Bob Ross. And it's also a game where you're not really out. It's got a very Euro feel where everybody's in the game. Mm-hmm. Even if you're behind, you know, you can get with the right cards, you can get back in the game. And it's a nice little 30-minute filler game. The pieces are cool. They actually use Bob Ross paintings.
Give a little Bob Ross meeple.
Give a little Bob Ross meeple with his little – with his
he
lovely –
he even has his product too, his brushes.
Yeah. All of his paints. Mm-hmm. And there are – much to Patrick's pleasure, there were some little quotes on each of the cards.
Nice.
On the Art of Chill, on the
Every
Chill card.
Every time Bob Ross comes up when you roll the dice. So you roll the dice, start of your turn, and it determines if you get an extra turn or an extra paint or, and you know, you.
Gives you a bonus.
It'll move Bob, and you flip a Chill card, and the Chill card affects the game in a different way, whether, you know, either he progresses forward and continues to painting because you're trying to beat him through his painting, you know, something else happens, but on the bottom of each card, there's a nice little quote from Bob Ross, which is fantastic, and it just brings you nice and mellow and relaxed.
Unless you're Justine.
Yeah,
this brought out the rage in Justine. This game, tell us why you were so enraged.
It's so peaceful. It's so irritating. If you don't want to screw... can I say screw your neighbor?
Yeah, you can say screw your neighbor.
If you don't want to screw your neighbor, play this game. If you don't want to play any defense or offense, play this game. It's way too chill and boring. Oh. So if you're one to watch Bob Ross and fall asleep, this game is for you. Just fall asleep.
No, it's not for you because you're falling asleep.
It's not for you. It'll put you to sleep again.
I found the name of the designer. I knew the publisher was Big G Creative, and again, this is a game that's available only at Target. It's a Target exclusive.
I have to go buy it.
Big G Creative is the publisher, and the designer is Prospero Hall. Prospero Hall. And again, there are some set collection and hand management. And you know, there's a dice rolling element. So a lot of the elements that you'll find in more modern board games are kind of introduced here. So if you're looking to kind of dip your toe, and you already know who Bob Ross is, and there's a kitsch value to knowing who Bob Ross is, but there's a decent game underneath.
It was fun.
It's not going to blow your socks off, but it's a fun filler game.
I agree. It wasn't like the most amazing game we've ever played, but it was fun. I enjoyed it a lot.
How is it a filler game? It went on forever. Was it really 30 minutes that we played?
We played a little longer, but
yes,
but people kept, for some reason, not knowing what the rules were.
Yeah, let's just not get into that. Let's just not get into that bad moment.
I felt like it went on like an hour too long.
That's because
no, that was the game of Citadels we played right afterwards. That took a long time.
A board game night, we were there for like 4 hours and we played two games.
Citadel's usually a favorite, and we played with the max number of people, and it really, really slowed things down.
And it got painful.
It got painful.
It got angry and
yeah, it was violent. Fun.
Back to Bob Ross.
Okay.
Yeah.
After you finished that first painting, I think it should have just stopped right there. There's too many points. It went way too long, in my opinion. The board game?
Well, I do, too, think that, you know, we didn't realize about points as far as how easy it is to get points early on, that, like, it took us a lot longer when it shouldn't have. Because getting those double points with just set collecting is just easy enough that you could just blow through. And
you can get bonus points for collecting certain paints and then using them in subsequent paintings and things like that. So, my wife and I enjoyed it. That is a game we would break out. If we wanted to just play something quick, and where we know we don't need to think too hard about it.
You're not going
to
get angry at each other.
Oh, I got angry.
You were very angry. I was.
But I wasn't mad at someone. I was mad at the game.
I was so surprised at how angry you got.
I know. It's
game is really
it's
giving
a chill game. And
I was like, I won.
Pissed.
Done.
She was just like, we're over. We're finished.
I won it.
Yeah, I remember your face when we just moved on to another painting. You're like, what? So I wanted to just take a minute with Justine. A couple of weeks ago, we were... we'll wait till Jake comes back.
Are we going to rate the game?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. You're right, Justine.
We should rate the game.
Yeah, go ahead.
I give it a 4.
Give it a 4?
Out of 5. That's pretty good, right?
No, it's not out of 5. It's definitely not out of 5.
What, out of 10?
No, I'll give it 4.
Out of
And that's only because it's Bob Ross.
4 out of 10 or what?
I give it 4 points. No, 4 out of 10, yeah.
Oh, okay. I give it like a solid 7.5. The game mechanics were simple enough to pick up as long as we understand the rules properly.
If it wasn't Bob Ross, would you still like the game?
No, not as much.
See?
Yeah, if you ask me, the Starving Artists, the one that Angie introduces to, it's a Kickstarter game. That to me was a superior art game.
Yeah.
You know, or even, I would even say...
We didn't get to play the Gallerist.
We didn't get to play the Gallerist because Jake, it took him 2 hours to read the...
Always.
It took him the entire game of
Bob Ross
for him to read the instructions.
But that game was beautiful.
It's like, a beautiful
looking
game.
Looked at the Gallerist, it was beautiful. Mm-hmm. The box, the pieces were like exquisite. They were nice and thick and, you know,
yeah,
beefy.
Okay. What was your rating?
I would give Bob Ross... You know what? I'm going to give it a solid, I would say it's a 6.
Ooh, that's high.
It's a 6. No, because I liked it better than like, you know, it to me it was more, I'm looking at the merit of it being someone who's, this is kind of like the Harry Potter deck builder, where someone who's never played a deck builder can get into Harry Potter because of the theme. Mm-hmm. And then they learn how to play a deck builder afterwards. And that's awesome because then you go on, you play Star Realms or you play Dominion or Ascension or whatever. And it's like, wow, that's a cool. This is, again, for people who have no concept of like modern board gaming, but they like Bob Ross or they just like, they think it's, oh, let's get this. Haha, this will be funny to play. You actually learn some new game mechanics in it. And it's like, oh, okay, now you can turn around and teach that person to play something like Jaipur or something very easily because now they understand how to play those.
I definitely think it's like the next step up above like Monopoly.
Yeah. It's a good filler game, meaning it fills in that step between
you know,
Monopoly and like Ticket to Ride, you know, where you're playing something that's, you know, a little bit different. You have a different mindset than you do a regular. So there's some merit in it. Is it the most exciting game to play? No, but I think that's the point. I think it's just like, let's relax and play a nice little...
It's relaxing. It's visually appealing. You just got to get into it. You got to get into the chill, you know?
Mm-hmm. It has a chill meter.
Yeah.
It's not to like.
So a couple of weeks ago, while the kids were playing another game with Jake, that I'm going to have Jake review when he gets back because I cannot remember the name of it.
I can't either, and I don't really want to talk about
okay.
it.
So, Patrick, you're going to have to sit silent for just a minute. You can jump in if you remember these games.
I never played them.
We played a couple of games. Blue Orange, if you guys don't know about Blue Orange games, check them out. They always do very interesting – they're a game publisher here in the States. They always do really interesting games. Their big game right now is called King Domino, which won the Spiel des Jahres. this year's Spiel des Jahres, which is like the, you know, Academy Awards for best game. And they do very fun, family-oriented. The pieces are always really nice. We have another game by them. I don't know if you guys remember. It's called Aztec, where you stack the little pieces. They're all the little Aztec symbols, and you stack them. Do you guys remember that one? They're really, really cool. They're really, really cool tiles. Yeah, they're really. It's a really cool game. But they published a game last year. I think it was last year. It was by our friend Bruno Cathala. It's an abstract strategy game. It's called Naya or Nia, N-I-Y-A. And basically the whole point is, according to Board Game Geek, each player tries to arrange her tokens to gain favor of the emperor. Alternatively, you can prevent your rival from placing a token in the imperial garden, showing that you have more control than your opponent. So it takes place ostensibly in feudal Japan, and you're trying to build the best garden. And so you have these you individual tiles, and on those individual tiles, you build a 4x4 square on the table. And each of these tiles is going to have two different symbols, and there's a bunch of different. So there's poems, mm-hmm. there's leaves, there's pine trees, there's birds, there's sun, there's clouds. And so when you take a tile from the 16x16 grid that you've built, you replace it with a little these nice little ceramic tokens of one of your courtesans, and you place it in the middle. And the whole idea, it's like a connect four. Yep. You want to get either four in a row diagonally or across, or four in a square before your opponent can do it. And the catch is, if I remove whatever tile I remove has two symbols on it, it's the same for every tile. Justine, if she's playing me, she has to replace a tile that has at least one of those symbols. So if I had a poem in a cloud, she would have to take a tile that has either a poem or a cloud. But it could have a poem in a sun or a cloud in a bird. It just has to have one of the elements that was on the tile I just took away. And so it turns into this little strategy game, because you can see where people have moves, and then you start taking the tiles from in front of them or trying to block them. And it's very quick, but there's a lot of fun strategy to it. You play the game in maybe 5 minutes.
Yeah, it's pretty short.
It's very short, but there's a lot of strategy in there.
Yeah.
And the pieces are really quality. They're really good little tiles. And, you know, the cardboard tiles aren't that great, but it's okay. You don't really need them for anything.
The art's okay, too.
Yeah. But I love this game, and it's a fun little strategy game that we just busted out because we were waiting for them to finish that.
Oh, yeah. I think we played like 3 rounds.
You're like, okay, let's play again. Okay, let's play again.
I was like, they're still talking. They're still reading the rules. Let's play again.
What did you think of it?
I like that game. It was fun. It was fun because you are screwing your neighbor, and it's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quick, so it's just fun to do.
You have to directly you go after somebody. It's you have to be on your game and block and be defensive.
Exactly. Yeah, you have to do both at the same time. It's pretty fun.
And what would you give this game?
For short games, I would give it a 8.
You like that one? You like it that much?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I really like the pieces. And you know, it's one of those games I just picked up on a whim, because I'm always – anything with feudal Japan, I'm a sucker for it. I'll buy – I just like the – you know. But I really like the tiles, and I knew the designer, Bruno Cathala, and I was like, oh, let's do it. Let's get it. And it's fun. And last night, my wife and my daughter played. We taught my daughter to play, and she beat me. You know, we played a couple games, and she figured out she beat me. She could not defeat my wife, and they literally played about 10 games in a row. But again – those 10 games took less than a half an hour.
I'll give it an 8 because it's easy to set up and just start.
Yeah.
And then you finish it pretty fast.
And it's in a small box.
Yeah.
I think it's probably about $15.
Yeah.
If you buy it on Amazon, it's NIYA.
And while you're playing it and you're thinking, it's pretty fast still. Sometimes there's games where you're thinking way too much and it's taking way too long.
Yeah.
It's pretty fast to just put it down and make up your mind.
Now, we played another game that was a little more rules intensive. Again, I love the travel edition of this game. There is a board edition, but I like the travel edition because the pieces are awesome. There's these little octagonal pieces. It's called Hive, and it's basically a chess variant, but you play with insects. The insects in the hive all have different methods of moving around the it's not even a board, because you're connecting the bugs to each other, and then once they connect, they make a hive, and then you move the bugs around the hive. Some bugs can move over, some can go around, some can jump.
Yeah, that one, I like that one a lot.
Yeah, it's called Hive. It's been around for a while. It's for two players. The designer is John Yanni, who also did the art, and it's published by Asmodee here in the States. But I love it.
The pieces, the sturdiness of that piece, I love that.
Yeah, you feel like you're playing.
It's kind of heavy. It's like slightly.
Yeah, you feel like you're playing. Like you're actually like moving these pieces around because they have like weight to them.
It's almost like a domino piece.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And the arch really just little bugs on top, and like the beetles move a certain way. The beetles can get up and go across and down. The
ants can go all the way around.
Yeah, they move like real bugs do. And yeah, then exactly. The mosquito I like because the mosquito basically. Can shapeshift, so whatever it's touching, that it takes on that the characteristics of that bug. And then there's a queen, and what you're basically trying to do is use these tiles to surround the opponent's queen. And the movements are restricted depending on the bug, and then also you have to place your queen before the fourth turn, so you can do it right away. But you have to place it before the fourth turn.
That's when you cheated, because all of a sudden I had to just defend my B because you had no B out, and I couldn't like get anything.
I forgot about that rule.
have our own B.
I forgot. Yeah, each player has to put their B out. So your whole thing is to protect the queen.
Yeah,
you protect your queen.
And it's hard to do that when your opponent didn't put down their own B.
It's easy.
And all of a sudden, I'm defending only.
It's easy to do it when I don't play. Yeah, I misread the rules to say you had to move it. You had to place it by your fourth. You had to place it by your fourth placement instead of by your fourth move. So your fourth move has to be. Yeah. You know.
Right when you attacked me, I'm like, wait, but, how come I'm not attacking you? Why can't I attack you?
Each of the bugs has their own individual movement style, and it seems like it's overwhelming at first, but you caught on right away.
Well, once you figure out what their moves are and then you realize what the bug is, it makes sense.
It makes total sense.
And
very
then you
intuitive.
Can figure it out pretty fast. Yeah.
Yeah. So what did you give this game?
I give it an 8 also.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I give it a 9.
You like it? I like the Hive, the Pocket Edition again.
Well, quickness of that. That's even faster than setting up the tiles.
Yeah, because you're not setting anything up.
Yeah, and even if we had to clean it up, I'm okay with it because it was just the tiles and you're done.
And you throw them in a little bag. It comes with a little like Crown Royal pouch.
Yeah.
And that's a great game because you can literally – that is the ultimate travel game because you can set it up anywhere. Like if you're in line at Disneyland and you're sitting on the ground, you could play it on the ground.
Yeah. Well, and it's also, what was I going to say? I lost it. Go ahead.
Are you okay? Did I interrupt you? No. I'm going to get in a lot of trouble if I interrupt you.
No, they don't listen to this show.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
All right, it's a really fast game, though.
Yeah, I love
it. I think it's faster than the other game.
Those tiles are cool.
Yeah, they are. It's one of the earliest games Nicole and I ever bought. And we don't play it that much anymore, and I need to get back to it because it's fun.
I loved it. You had to tell me to stop because they were still doing other things. I'm like, let's just play one. Let's just set it up already.
What's the difference between the Pocket Edition and the Board Edition?
The Board Edition, there's no – in the Pocket Edition, you just play it on the table.
The Board Edition is a lot more pricey than the
– Yeah. I just get the – it's like $15 for the travel. It's worth it.
$15 for travel, and I think when I saw it at the store, it was $40 for the board game.
Just get the travel edition because you can play it in literally anywhere.
Yeah.
$24 on Amazon.
$24 for the board edition or the travel edition?
Board.
How much is the travel edition on Amazon?
19.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
I like the travel edition, though.
And then there's also a carbon one that's black and white, which is kind of cool.
I've seen that one.
I saw that. That was there, too. But what's the point in the board? What do you need the board for?
That's what I was asking. It doesn't look like you need it.
We didn't need it.
Yeah. I don't know. There might be. I've only played the travel edition, and I love it. It's called Hive Pocket.
I know how to make a hive. I don't need a board to tell me how to do it.
Yeah, girl.
Dang.
Yeah,
it probably just has the hive, like the octagons laid out, and you can just place it anywhere. All right. So now, by the time this show airs, it will be Halloween week. So we wanted to take a few minutes and just talk about our favorite horror-themed games, little spooky, scary games. And we all kind of talked in the minute we had before the show, and we kind of threw a bunch out there. So, Justine, like, what is your favorite game with a horror theme that we've played?
I like Last Friday. Did I say
that? Yes, last Friday.
Last Friday.
Last Friday's a good one. Let me look that up real quick. Do you want to tell them? Do you kind of want to give us the breakdown of what that game is?
I don't know what the story is. I never read a story on it, but it just looks like a campground, like a summer camp, and they have little tents or what is that, like a cabin?
Cabins.
They have cabins, and it's like looking at the map of the park or the campground. And from there, there's someone that's going around killing. Is there only one person?
Yeah.
There's one killer, yeah.
There's one killer going after everyone that's there at the camp. I don't know what they were called. They're just...
It's basically based on...
Are they camp leaders or...
Counselors.
Counselors?
Yeah.
And there's no kids involved, right? It's
just counselors? No. I think the counselors are there before. Because you can play the game as... There's four chapters. You play the game as a standalone, which we've done. Uh-huh. You play the first chapter.
Oh,
and then there's like that. There's like a whole sequence of it.
Okay, so then there's this killer on the loose trying to go after you, and he has certain movements that he can go to, and you have your own that you can do too. It's kind of like there's another game like that, right? The Dracula one.
The Dracula one, which we're going to talk about as well too.
Yeah.
So Last Friday is published by Ares Games here in the United States. Designed by Antonio Ferrara and Sebastiano Fiorio. I can't say it. I'm not Italian. But I'm sorry. I'm very sorry, Sebastiano. But it's based on the idea of a Friday the 13th or, you know, Halloween. So everybody who's a counselor, you all have a key that you're assigned a cabin depending on your player color, and you have a key that unlocks that cabin. The only way into the cabin is if you are with a person next to, let's say you're blue, you're the blue counselor,
mm-hmm.
and Justine is the yellow counselor, but she picks up the blue key. She can open the blue cabin, but you have to be with her. Is that the rule?
No, you can get in.
If she opens it,
the blue counselor can get into the blue cabin.
Yeah.
But nobody else can get in that cabin except for you two.
Yeah, that's it.
The way murderer kills people is not by like attacking them directly. It's kind of even more horrifying is that he just has to pass over you.
Cross paths.
Just has to go past you, and you don't even know you're dead till the end of the round. And then he's like, oh, yeah, you died that round.
Well, and the great element is that they have a lake in the middle, which is perfect for a campground. And then you can go onto that rowboat and make it across.
Screw your friends over. Be like, no, I left the boat over here.
What happens is at the very beginning, you put out the keys, and they're all flipped over randomly. So there's some bonus tokens you can use to help you. And you hide the keys randomly, and then you start at different parts of the camp, and you don't know where the killer starts on the edges of the board, and there's rules of the way he moves, and you find out where the killer was three moves ago, but you never know where he is. There are ways to find out, but you have to pick up those bonus tokens and stuff to use lanterns and things like that. The way you find out where he is if he murders somebody. Then you know he's within a couple of steps of... And he moves along a number.
Also, there's points in the game where he has to reveal his location.
Yeah, every third move, you know where he was.
Which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's actually a lot in this game.
Not where he, because there's just so many ways you can go.
And he moves so quickly that it's just like you don't even know where he is three moves
ago. I just like this game over the Dracula game just because I feel like it's always super close to someone dying. Like someone is just about to get in the cabin and then they get killed.
Well, we're gonna talk about Fury of Dracula because
I'm just bringing it up.
But I like that this one is a lot more closer to that. Sometimes when we play that game, the other game, I feel like it's... I have no idea where you are.
Yeah.
It takes a bit longer.
It's a little more suspenseful because in the Dracula, in Fury of Dracula, which we're going to talk about, Dracula's basically on the run and can gain power if he stays alive long enough. This one, the killer is going right after
you. Yeah, he's going.
My favorite kill ever, because I'm somehow always the killer, was when Eduardo got to the porch of his cabin and I got, got him before he could get into the cabin. It was, he had to wait one turn to like... unlock. He got to the porch and his turn was over. So on his next turn, he was going to unlock and go in, and I got him before he could get in. That was the best.
Poor guy.
And I love that you guys will abandon someone on the far side of the lake. If you can get to the rowboat first, there's no waiting. You just take off.
Yeah, no, we're like, yeah, no, you're not going to make it. So I got to, it's every man for himself.
In your nephew did that the most.
Yeah.
Just Jason screws everybody over. And then he turns around and he's like, yeah, no, I'm sorry. We'll be best friends. And I'm like, no, you got me murdered. It's over.
That's a fun game. Last Friday. Check it out. It's fun. If you're a fan of like Friday the 13th and stuff like that, and when you look at the board, it looks complicated because there's a series of dots that are interconnected, and the campers move along one dot, and the one set of dots, and the killer moves along another. But it's you'll figure it out right away.
Nice board pieces.
Yeah, and while you're setting it up, you can play Hive.
Yeah, and if you're the killer, you get this little game master shield, kind of like a dungeon, like a game, and you can see there's like a peephole to look like you're looking through the wall of a cabin or something. Like,
does it really?
Yeah, it has that peephole.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So you're supposed to like look through the
creepy.
Yeah, it's fun. It's really, really fun. Last Friday. What do you got, Patrick? What's one of your favorite horror games?
I was going to bring up Betrayal at House on the Hill.
Betrayal at House on the Hill.
It's a fun kind of haunted house story where you're actually building the house out as you go. So you all start in a room and you're all kind of investigating and searching for not really anything. I mean, you're just kind of exploring the house. But each person lays out a house token, and from there you're exploring. And then at some point in the game, one of your players, and it's random, turns traitor. And
yeah, it's random every game. You never know who it's going to be, but you know it's going to happen to someone. Yeah.
So like, there's set story parts that happen for each betrayal. But it's either you're trying to kill this person, or you're trying to escape, or you're trying to collect this certain item.
And this is the one that has a booklet on like which one
exactly
you're doing,
each
right?
booklet. So each like situation from the cards has a different story, which is really cool. So it's got a lot of different playthrough, which I think is really nice. I don't think you can ever really play the same game unless you play it a lot.
It is published for 3 to 6 players. It is designed by Rob Davio, Bruce Glasgow, Bill McQuillan, Mike Selinker, and Tewin Woodruff, published by Avalon Hill Games and now Wizard of the Coast. It is a fun game. My only complaint – do you like it, Justine? Do you like Betrayal
of the House? I feel like as soon as we figure out who the – what is he? A traitor. Traitor is?
Mm-hmm.
That's when it takes a long time because they have a ton of things to read. And then we're just kind of sitting around waiting.
My only complaint about the game is that it does skewer in favor of the
betrayer.
The betrayer more often than not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they get multiple people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard.
Yeah, there was one where I was like a priest or something, and then I got possessed and I had all these like demons minions and they were all over. There was no way for you guys to escape. It was just a matter of how I could get you.
Time.
I think we got stuck in an elevator or something.
Was weird. So I've noticed that it's kind of overpowered. And someone told me the expansion, which I have not played, that the expansion that it's even more overpowered to
really?
Be the. So that's my only complaint about the game. But it's a fun. If you like haunted house movies, it's like playing a haunted house movie.
Yeah,
and like Patrick said, you're building the house.
And that's like the really cool element to me is that the house unfolds as you go. It's not like set. It's just like, oh, what do
and
we have coming up?
It's kind of cool because some of the pieces for the next house piece you might get is just like a crack.
Yeah.
Like you just fall down.
Like, whoop, I fell down a hole.
Well, I'm in the basement
now.
There's
all these doors, but then you can't go through some of them. It's kind of
yeah. Cool. You're kind of building like the Winchester Mystery House.
Exactly.
As you go through, some doors don't go anywhere. One of my favorite board games, and we don't play it because of the setup time. But I know you guys love it, and it's perfect. If you're going to have, you don't want to go trick or treating anymore. You're going to stay home on Halloween and watch scary movies. Go out and buy this game, and you'll have a lot of fun. It's called Mysterium.
Yeah.
And you're basically, it is, now I'm going to have some trouble with these names. Designer Oleksandr Nevsky. And it's published by Asmodee here in the United States. One person is the game master, not unlike Last Friday. And that game master plays the role of a ghost who has been murdered. And everybody else in the game take on the role of mediums who are trying to contact the spirit. So it's kind of a team game, although there will be one medium that will ultimately be triumphant, you're all kind of trying to figure it out together. This is a very abstract game because you have to find the suspect. You have to identify the suspect, the murder weapon, and the place they were murdered. The ghost is trying to communicate all this to you. The ghost can only communicate via thumbs up or thumbs down. So the mediums are asking him questions. And the way the medium or the ghost communicates is through pictures. So there's these beautiful, beautiful pieces, art cards with very abstract paintings on them. And you might have a painting of someone carrying an umbrella. And so you put that out hoping that one person, you hand them to each individual player. Each individual medium gets their own card. So they have to interpret what is on that card correctly.
Yeah.
And at the end of every round, the ghost will give somebody a thumbs up or a thumbs down as to whether or not they made the correct guess. Those that guess correctly get to move on and identify the next piece of the puzzle. There is an element, depending on which game you play, you can play with or without the rules, where you try to be the best medium. We don't play that way. That was actually the original game didn't have that, and that there was a variant, I think, that came from, I want to say, Poland, that added that element to the game. I think originally the game was from Czechoslovakia, which doesn't exist anymore, but it was Czech. We usually play without that. We just make the team win. We house rule it so the whole team wins, if everybody wins. And it makes it a lot more fun because everybody's trying to guess. But some of those pieces, some of those cards are really, really hard to get.
The artwork and the whole setup is beautiful, too.
And it's very – the game board is beautiful. It's very atmospheric game. Like, once you have it set up and you're looking at all the pieces, it's got a very nice feel to it. And it's one of the most beautiful games I think I've ever seen, just set up and laid out on the table. It does take a while to set up, though, because you have to find all the right cards and assign everybody a different suspect and do this whole thing. It's really, really cool. Justine, what do you think?
I only remember playing it once, but it's been a long time. It's been a year since we played that game, right?
Didn't we play it? You might have been gone the last time we played it.
We did play it not too long
ago. We played it recently. Oh. Because I think Jason wanted to play it. So you may have been gone. Okay. It might have been one of the nights you were gone.
Last time I played it, we were in that room.
Oh, okay. No, we've played it since then. Yeah.
And I think that was like the first time we played it. So I don't remember it that well. That's why I had to go look it up and look at the picture. But it is pretty. I don't know. I don't remember.
It's a fun game. It reminds me of what's the card?
It's another, Dixit.
Dixit, yeah. So it's the same basic principle of Dixit where you're assigned a card and you're trying to use that card to figure out.
You could actually swap.
You could use the cards
for Dixit in this, and it would work perfectly.
Basically, those are giving you an inkling of who you are and, you know, where you should be going and what your kind of information is. But it really depends on how well you know the person who's giving the clues.
Mm-hmm.
Because what they're doing is they're trying to give you just enough information in hopes that they'll be on the same wavelength of you and try and send you those psychic and, you know...
But it's so funny being the game master because watching it and not being able to say anything, it's funny because you see people form theories and go off in the completely wrong direction. Like you'll see it go, it could mean this. No, but it could also mean this.
And you're like, nah.
And then, you know, you have certain strong personalities that will take it and run with it. And then it's like, nope. And then the people who just kind of intuitively go, oh, it's red. And there's a red duck in this painting and he's wearing a red sash. So I'm going to do that. And everybody else will be like, that's stupid.
And that's usually what it is.
Ends up being the right thing. So there's a lot of ways. It's fun. It's a fun game for people watching because you see people's thought processes. So that's why I like it a lot. So Mysterium's another good one. What else do you guys have? Do you guys have any other?
We've mentioned this several times. Fury of Dracula.
Fury of Dracula is one of my favorites.
It's made by Fantasy Flight.
That's right.
It is kind of like Last Friday in the sense that there's one person who plays Dracula and then everybody else is a hunter trying to catch him. And you're moving all across Europe.
And that's like an old school map too.
Yeah, it's an old school
map. Mine's like the other game, Last Friday, is like a Disney map of a campground.
Yeah.
This one's just like this old school map that looks pretty cool.
Yeah, it looks very, very Victorian.
Yeah.
You're all characters from Bram Stoker's Dracula, and you're trying to catch Dracula, and he's running through different parts of Europe and confronting people, and he lays traps as he goes, so you may run into something and get trapped. This one actually tends to be a little bit more movement-wise heavy on player movement, not Dracula movement. He tends to be a lot slower, which is kind of nice because, you know, it gives us a better chance. I feel like this one's a little bit more balanced versus Last Friday, which tends to be more killer heavy.
Yeah.
So this one's a little bit more balanced in that he has a lot he can do.
He's powerful, but he's limited. He's limited because he can't move during the day.
Yeah.
There's two phases, a night movement and a day movement. He can't move during the day. If he's on the ocean, he's losing power because he's not in his lair at night.
Yeah.
So every day he's on the ocean, and you can see where he's moving. You can track him. His power comes from being able to lay traps and kind of take out the hunters, or at least delay them by doing stuff. And you can also use that to your advantage to lay false. You can send people off on the wrong scent. Like, why is Dracula blocking the railroad in, you know, in Zagreb, you know? But he must be there. Well, no, now he's in Florence, you know, so you're like, it's really, really cool. It's fun. It's fun being Dracula, and you guys have never caught me.
You've never actually caught Dracula, but we've caught on to where Dracula has been. I mean, I know personally, I have, like, figured out where you've been a couple times, and I've
I will
been,
tell
like,
you this, the last time
track of him, and I'm just like, I know where he's at, but I can't get to
him. The last time we played, you guys came, I remember this, you guys came within one move, and you made a wrong turn, and I was able to get away, but you guys were within one turn of capturing Dracula. And if you encounter him, the thing is, it takes place over the course of 3 weeks. And if you wait, if you get into that third week, he's too powerful. He'll just anyone that tries to capture him just dies instantly. So
yeah, and it's cool because isn't that like a sun?
Yeah,
it's a really cool sun that you keep moving over.
Yeah, it's really cool. The pieces are nice. Right now, though, I just looked. By the way, the designer is Frank Brooks, Stephen Hand, and Kevin Wilson.
It's out of print.
Of print. So right now on Amazon, it's going for about $300.
No.
No, because that was a big thing when it first came. eBay, we got it.
When it first came back in, when it was in print again,
it stopped like a week later.
Yeah. When it came back in, I jumped on it because it was one of those games that was like $300. Right now on eBay, it's going for $281.95.
And it's out of print, and you can't buy new ones.
Well, Mario, if your thing is missing and I have something shiny and new, you know exactly what happened.
Some of these board games, when they go out of print,
your daughter's going to take it and just sell
it. That's it. Do you guys have any other ones?
I have some honorable mentions.
Go ahead, yes.
That way we don't have to get too deep. Ultimate Werewolf.
Yeah, that's always fun.
That's a great party game, and that's a nice horror one. Zombicide, it's a longer kind of
a dungeon crawl. Yep.
What else was there? Pandemic.
That's terrifying because that could really happen.
Yeah, that's why it's so scary.
It's a co-op game where you're trying. Just say it's zombie breakouts, and then you turn instant horror game.
I think that's pretty much it. Those are the ones I can think of off the top of my head from a list that I made.
Friendly Halloween ones would be that. What is it? Ghosts and Candy.
Oh, that's right.
That was
that's
a
right.
fun, cute one.
And Skulls.
Oh, Skulls is a good one.
Which is just simple.
It's basically Russian roulette.
Yeah.
With Dia de los Muertos skulls on it.
Yeah, so that one's pretty to play.
Another one I would throw out there for a deeper game, we talked about it a little bit. It's a dice rolling game, and it's called Elder Signs. It's based on the works of H.P. Lovecraft. That is a hard game. It's a co-op game. You're basically trying to stop the end of the world by rolling the right combination of dice. But every time you don't do it, and the art on that is really, really cool.
Yeah.
So check that one out. That's a good one. But there are a lot of really great Halloween games you can get, and hopefully we're putting this out in time so that if you decide you want to play this game on Halloween, you'll have a week to figure it out.
You're into zombies, there's no end to the zombie games.
Every game has a zombie variant. Yeah, but these are the ones I feel like the ones we mentioned really kind of are evocative and kind of set a tone and a mood.
They're a lot of fun.
Yeah. Last Friday puts you in the mind if you are nervous because you're like, oh, I'm going to die at any second. Like,
well, and it's like a nostalgic thing too. Yeah, it's a camp. It's very old school.
It
horror
puts
movie.
You in the shoes of the camper, and that's freaky in itself. You get like straight stress and panic.
It's fun to watch people.
And you're like, oh god, I'm going to die. I'm going to die.
You can get stuck in a tent too because it'll say there's a body there.
Yeah, if you there's a body in front of you, you can't go past it until you bury.
Yeah, you have to bury the body.
So it's terrible.
What's funny about Dracula, on the flip side of that, is the hunters are very aggressive until someone encounters Dracula. They're like, after that, they're like, oh, yeah, no, maybe maybe we don't want to be that aggressive.
Maybe we don't kill this unstoppable force here.
It's funny because you see people, there he is, and then the first hunter gets there, and then they just get so messed up, and they're like, okay, yeah, maybe we just back off and wait till I get there.
Yeah.
I better wait for backup.
I've come close to killing Dracula. I've come so close.
It's hard to kill him. He's not easy to kill. Mysterium, though, check that out. If you're looking to get – it's a little more complicated.
It is, but I think overall, mechanic-wise, it's a lot more simple.
Once you figure it out, yeah.
Versus Fury of Dracula or Last Friday, just because the team playing aspect makes it a lot easier versus the movement mechanic of Fury of Dracula and Last Friday is different. That one's just more internal thought, which is a lot easier, I think, for people to pick up.
Well, if you guys can get a copy or if you can find a copy somewhere of Fury of Dracula, good luck. But one game we didn't – if you like horror games, Dead of Winter, which is a zombie survival game, is a good one. Mm-hmm. Check that one out. That's another one. And there may or may not be a betrayer in that game. So that's always a fun one. I've never played any of the Arkham Horror series. We have Eldritch Horror. I've never played it. It's on my to-play list. But those are all based on the works of H.P. Lovecraft, and those are all – at least the artwork there is very, very spooky and really, really cool.
And so, those games take a long time.
Those games take a while. So that might not be the best place to jump in if you're beginning, but definitely check out some of the ones that we talked about. So until next time, guys, for Justine and for Patrick, we say
– game on.
May the dice be with you. And that's it. We'll see you guys next time.